Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate today. Orcas, commonly known as killer whales, are popular for their attractive black and white markings and starring roles in SeaWorld's Shamu shows. They're also extremely intelligent and highly social, like bottlenose dolphins and humans. David Kirby has examined the decades-long practice of killer whales in captivity, including the recent federal case about SeaWorld safety practices. His book, published by St. Martin's Press, is called Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity. David Kirby, it's a pleasure to welcome you here.
Thank you very much, Elliot. This is my third book and third time on the show, so those are six big honors for me.
Glad to have you back. Is it fair to say from the outset that you are against having orcas in captivity?
That was not my position beginning this. In fact, I didn't even set out to write a book about captivity. I was more interested in the aftermath of the death of Dan Brancho and the federal investigation and allegations that the company was trying to thwart that. But soon after starting my research, I learned what life is like for these whales, and then I learned what life is like in the wild. And after a careful, objective examination, I could not come to any other conclusion.
So how long have orcas been in captivity?
This practice started in the early 60s. The first orcas that were captured were taken from their pods in very brutal circumstances and put on display. They usually didn't live very long. We didn't know how to care for them. What is interesting is almost from the beginning, people were getting in the water with them. So orca display has almost always had this show business component to it and what they call water work, which, of course, now is on hold at SeaWorld since this tragic death in 2010.
I was going to get to this later, but we might as well jump to it. You've written in the Huffington Post and some articles in the Boston Globe this week. They're actually starting that water work in the last couple of days, right?
As we speak, there are trainers putting some body part in the water, in the medical pool with the killer whales as a way of desensitizing them, basically retraining them to have people in the water with them. SeaWorld says it's not necessarily for the shows, that this enhances veterinary care and animal husbandry. You can care for the animal better if you are physically in the water with it. And it also trains the animals not to react if somebody accidentally slips and falls in the pool. But there's holes in both of those arguments, so we can talk about it, but it's not a consistent argument from their point of view.
And this change in policy, literally in the last couple of days, is that are they going along with the Labor Department and OSHA rules by doing this?
Well, the OSHA violation and the judge who upheld the violation only pertains to show performances in the show pool. So technically, anything SeaWorld does backstage in terms of animal care or even just what they call relationship sessions, training sessions, the trainers can legally get back in the water with the whales. So that's what SeaWorld is doing. But they made no bones about trying to get the trainers back into the performances as well. They've installed new technical measures, a fast-rising pool bottom in one of the pools.
Somebody falls in and the whale just out of the water quickly.
Or if somebody's performing with the whale and the whale goes off behavior and grabs that trainer, such as we've seen in the video last week that was released, you could lift the bottom and basically beach that whale and try to get the trainer out of its mouth before something terrible happens.
I had heard this story about Ken Peters before the video. Why do you think this video came out last week when this incident with him being dragged down by a whale and then actually him being calm, if I understand it right,
yes,
and being let back up? This happened in 2006.
It did.
Why was this video just released now?
It was produced by SeaWorld as a safety training video. It was internal. SeaWorld never expected this to be viewed by the public, but it was presented in court last fall in Orlando when SeaWorld took the Labor Department to court to try to overturn this. I saw it. It shocked everybody in the courtroom. Boy, did silence fall in that room when the video was played. And only now that the judge's ruling has been issued and the Labor Department has upheld that ruling and refused to hear an appeal, all of those documents, everything that was presented at trial, now becomes available through FOIA. And
so we'll get to the death of Don Brancho a little bit later on, but in this particular case, it was a very similar incident. How did he actually escape the grip of this killer whale from the bottom of the pool?
In the 2006?
Yeah, Mr. Peters.
Well, again, he followed protocol and acted with remarkable calm and kept his head. He was actually having to calm down his colleagues on the edge of the pool, telling them to shut up because they were just exciting the whale more. You're taught to go limp, basically. And the whale obviously did not mean to kill him because she could have very, very easily. her calf was crying for her in the back of the pool. This had happened on several occasions previously when her calf was crying for her, and she basically, I think, wanted to teach him a lesson. She took him hostage, and she dragged him down to the bottom of the pool several times, held him there, but did bring him back up. She could have stayed down for much, much longer than that. She knew that he had to breathe. But she was obviously distressed and very unhappy. So this incident was a very serious warning and shows, when you see it, just how powerful these animals are and how helpless a grown man, an experienced swimmer, is when you're in their jaws.
On one level, it might not make any difference, but I think for the passive observer, we want to know, in all of these instances, are these whales being aggressive or are they playing?
I don't think that's playing, what we see in that video. I think that's aggression. In other instances, it's possible it was just roughhousing that got out of hand. If you look at Tillicum, who has been responsible for 3 human deaths, in my opinion, and the opinion of scientists I spoke to, it was a progressive, he's a progressive serial killer, if you will. The first death, a trainer, her foot accidentally slipped into the water up in British Columbia in 1991. Tillicum grabbed her, and it looked like the 3 whales in the pool were playing with her like a beach ball, like they might do with a seal, you know, the mammal-eating whales might do. She drowned. In 1999, a man was unfortunate enough to sneak into Tillicum's pool at night. He killed that trainer. It's not known because nobody witnessed it. The third incident with Dawn Brancho, if you read the autopsy, if you read the OSHA report, if you know what actually happened to her, and I won't go into all the details because they're really, really gruesome, but he did ram her repeatedly, and he would actually get from one end of the pool and gather speed. Even after she had either passed out or died, he continued to ram her. That's not playing. There was some intention in that act.
SeaWorld's biggest claim to the importance of having captive orcas is scientific study. What kinds of scientific discoveries or advances has SeaWorld made through their efforts?
I looked and looked, and I know people who did major literature searches through the peer-reviewed published literature on orcas kept in captivity at SeaWorld, and there was a handful. I would say maybe 30 or 40. Only about half of them could really be applied to killer whale research in the wild. Most of it had to do with transporting whales, artificial insemination, other husbandry issues pertaining to captivity. The main thing they did discover is that the pregnancy period for females is 18 months, not 17 months. That's good. They have done some research on language, on dialect, on communication, but it's hard. When a whale is in the ocean swimming 100 miles a day with its family, it's hard to replicate that in captivity. Yes, there are studies you can do in captivity you could never do in the wild, but it's hard to determine exactly how applicable they are to whales in the wild. And SeaWorld is an entertainment company. It's not a scientific research outfit.
You center on a woman, Dr. Naomi Rose, in your book. Tell us who she is.
She is one of the leading experts on wild killer whales in the world, and now one of the leading opponents and activists or advocates against keeping them in captivity. She's a senior scientist at the Humane Society of the United States. She started studying these whales in 1985 up in British Columbia, went there every summer to live with what's called the northern resident population. These are fish-eating orcas that have very strong family bonds. The males live with their mother for life. They don't leave the pod. It's a very unusual setup for mammals. And they're very compassionate with others, and she fell in love with these animals, thought she would get a job as a scientist somewhere, but ended up working at the Humane Society. Became that odd hybrid of scientist-advocate and has dedicated, really, her life to fighting this practice and trying to warn people that captivity is bad for orcas and dangerous for people who work with them.
I'm Elliot Forrest, in for Leonard Lopate today. My guest is David Kirby. His book, Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity. Dr. Naomi Rose now works for the Humane Society, but prior to that, she had a very interesting dissertation. What was that about?
Yes, it was. She was one of the first people to study the social behaviors of the male whales in British Columbia. Orca society is dominated by females. They're what's called matrilines, so the families are all based on the mothers and their children. And as I mentioned, in most mammal societies, it's the males who leave and the females who stay close to mom. It's the exact opposite. The females don't leave entirely, but they do start their own families. And the males, you have these huge testosterone-charged animals hanging out with moms and their young calves. And how can that possibly work? How does that work? And she found three really interesting things, I thought. First of all, they burn off their testosterone in what she called moseys, male-only social interactions where they just go off by themselves. And it's quite sexual, honestly, and it's burning off tension. They're away from the females and the infants, so they're not disruptive. And then they go back to mom. But they also have this evolutionary deal that got worked out. Basically, they will babysit their younger brothers and sisters so mom can go off and socialize or rest or whatever. They'll look after the younger calves sort of in exchange for being able to stick around. And then you say, well, what's in it for them? Well, by hanging out with mom, when mom does hang out with other females from other pods that she knows quite well, that gives him entree for sexual liaisons with females, and it prevents inbreeding, et cetera. It's a wonderful system, and it's worked for millions of years. So,
and this was discovered in Miss Rowe's dissertation.
Yes, she documented it. I think people had looked into it before, but her paper really proved that this was true.
Death at SeaWorld is obviously a pretty provocative title. You tried to talk to some people at SeaWorld. They wouldn't speak to you, right?
Initially, they did. When I first started my research, they were in communication with me, and I was writing some Huffington Post pieces, and it was all very cordial. And then towards the end, they decided to stop cooperating. They didn't like what I was saying and writing, which is a shame because I wanted to get their point of view as much as I possibly could, and I certainly wanted to do fact-checking. Some of these incidences are based on people's recollections 20 years ago. I have heard some – I'm hearing from insiders now, which is interesting.
At SeaWorld.
Yes.
Yeah. What are they telling you?
They read the book and they think it's true. So that makes me feel good because I didn't have access to them. I wish I did. But I did try to put SeaWorld in the industry's point of view in everywhere. Using the public record, using their own documents, their own statements to Congress and to the press. And so it's not completely one-sided, even though my point of view is quite obvious.
You have a couple of people who are now ex-SeaWorld employees that you focus on. Is it Jeff Ventra?
Ventry
and John Jett. Tell us about them.
Sure, and also Carol Ray and Samantha Berg. These are four former trainers at Shamu Stadium. Interestingly, and great for me, they were working in Orlando at the same time that Naomi Rose was up in British Columbia studying the wild whales. So in real time, I get to switch back and forth between northern British Columbia, someplace most people have never been, and backstage at Orlando, another place most people have never been. And the juxtaposition could not be more striking. Jeff and John worked very closely. All four of them worked with the killer whales. John was on Tillicum's team. He resigned when he was ordered to masturbate the whale on a regular basis because Tillicum is one of their largest breeders. Many of the offspring and now third generation whales at SeaWorld are related to Tillicum and possibly have some aggressive strain in them. We don't know. There is interbreeding and even inbreeding at SeaWorld.
And the protection, or at least the use of Tillicum to a certain extent, is that this is a very large animal.
He's huge.
Compared to all the other whales they have.
He's huge. Males in the ocean get even bigger, but he's at least 30 feet long. He looks like a school bus. He's absolutely massive and powerful, and he has killed three people. But these trainers all became disillusioned over time with SeaWorld. John and Jeff in particular were very almost tortured by it internally and both left on not very good terms. And they're now, Jeff is an MD and John is a professor at a university in Florida. All four of them are very accomplished, very intelligent people. It's not like they have an axe to grind against SeaWorld. They have, I think, in a difficult way, come around to realize that what they were doing was wrong. And they were sort of buying into the SeaWorld propaganda, if you will, while they worked there, thinking that this was great for the whales. Well, now they realize it's not. And we can go into some of those conditions if we have time.
We've only got about a minute and a half left. Just mention one or two, and then I've got a couple more.
Well, the one that struck me the most is that the annual mortality rate at SeaWorld in captivity is 2.5 times the rate in the northern and southern resident population in the Northwest. That alone almost tells me that it's wrong. You have the collapsed dorsal fins. Most of the males, their giant fins are collapsed over on their backs. And you have dental problems. You have immune system problems. You have aggression problems. They fight with each other. Sometimes they die in these fights. They die in childbirth in really horrendous ways. And again, the teeth, when they break their teeth, the pulp has to be drilled out with a handheld drill that you get at Home Depot. And it must be excruciating for these animals.
We've only got about a minute left, but if you feel killer whales should not be captive, studied, and played with in these environs, it's not a hard leap for me to think that perhaps the same thing about zoos and aquariums, which seem to do so much good in breeding and study and conservation. Where do you draw the line?
I wrote a book specifically about one species. I'm not casting. I'm not anti-captivity. I'm not anti-zoo. I'm not even anti-SeaWorld. When I looked into this animal, I thought it was particularly unsuited. Too big, too smart, too attached to its family, too free-ranging to keep in what is essentially a swimming pool for entertainment. Does that expand to other cetaceans, whales and dolphins, also in captivity? I think if I did the same thorough research, I might well come to the same conclusion. Other animals, such as the great apes and elephants, probably too smart to keep in captivity. They are so self-aware. They know what's happening to them. As for other animals, I'm really not sure. Some actually do better, live longer in captivity. I think we have to look at it species by species. I know people disagree. Both counts, either captivity's fine or captivity's terrible. I take a more nuanced approach.
It's fascinating. The book is called Death at SeaWorld, Shamu and the Dark Side of Killer Whales in Captivity. David Kirkby has been my guest. It's published by St. Martin's Press. I want to thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks a lot, Elliot.